Satyoga is the return to the real from lostness in the imaginary register of consciousness. What does that mean? You see, we learn language from the other. The other determines the meaning of the signs that are applied to us. And we become identified with a sign, but the meaning of that sign is in the hands of the other. And so Descartes was wrong in his I think, therefore I am. It's more accurate to say I think, therefore I don't know what I am, or how I am, or who I am, because the I am is determined by the other. And so in what Lacan called the mirror stage, which I would actually say is more appropriately called the stage of the giving of the sign, the imposing of the sign. When the kid is put up to the mirror and the mama says, that's you, and the child says, that's me, but the me, and then later the I, that sign is determined by the look on the mother's face and the way the child is treated and the way that the child is attended to and given either approval or disapproval, attention or neglect, or a smothering of attention that means it cannot exist separately. And so the meaning of the sign that one takes, because it will be given by two parents, it will be given by a number of different big others, will always have an incoherence. And the sign will always have an emotional charge. Am I good or bad? Am I lovable or rejectable? Am I a keeper or a loser? And that charge, that incoherence of whether there is a positive or negative charge upon the sign that has been imposed upon me and that I wear on my back for the, to say either kick me or kiss me, but there's always a sign that the ego does not control because the meaning is conferred by the other. And so this is what creates dependence and the constant need for approval, containment, validation, etc. But what needs to be contained is the stability of the significance of the sign. And because the sign has an incoherence, an ambivalence of positive and negative, one tends to project the negative sign out on one and the positive out on another in order to get reflected back by the desire of the other that has been projected on with the positive sign and rejection to the negative. And thus this determines the way one moves through the social space in accord with the signs that one perceives in the other that are projected upon it. And therefore, with one other, if one is rejected, if that's the positive big other that gives you the sign that you're good and you're rejected, then you're a loser. You cannot get rid of the feeling of being a failure. But if you love another one that has the negative charge, you're a failure for loving that one. And so you cannot get out of a push-pull in which there is always an ambivalence and a desire to be elsewhere. or a desire to have what is never establishable as your own. It's this split mind in which the power to control the signification of the sign that you are in the currency of language that is the economic system of the big other that controls you by your need to have a sign that is of a high stature in the spectrum and the hierarchy of values causes one to act in ways that are not true to one's own being and one's own nature, but are in accord with the demand of the big other that represents the source of the naming and the valuing of what you are. And so to be free of this enslavement to the signification by the other that can determine whether we are in a good mood or a bad mood, whether we think we are on the right side or the wrong side of reality, will be dependent upon our ability to leave the realm of the big other, which is the realm of language and of imagery, and to climb Mount Sinai to the real I am at the summit of the mountain of the real, and find that burning bush, the tree of life, that has its own independent power to shine without need to be reflected upon by another. It's this independence or sovereignty, swarajya, that is the first attainment of Satyoga. Let's wrap up with our friend Master Wangpo. Someone asks him, does the Buddha really liberate sentient beings? So we can see that the Buddha is put into the place of the big other. He could liberate you by giving you the right sign, right? If he says, you're a bodhisattva. Okay. Or else he says, no, you're just a sentient being. Sorry. 10 more lifetimes. Do your prayers, do your prostrations. What are you? Well, Wangpo answers, there are in reality no sentient beings to be delivered by the Buddha, the Tathagata, the one who is thus gone, in other words, gone from language. If even self has no objective existence, how much less other than self? Thus neither Buddha nor sentient beings exist objectively. So, here is a Buddhist saying there's no such thing as a Buddha, and you don't want to believe that there's a Buddha because then the Buddha is going to give you a sign that you're either on the road to liberation or to hell. You don't want to depend upon that. So, an object, that which has an objective existence, is that which has been named. But when you are in the nameless, you are also in the formless, and you realize that you have no form. Consciousness has no objective existence. Consciousness has the power to name objects. That's why a thing is only a think. But if you can name as a blessing, then the think becomes a thank. And the thank you is always for being given the blessing of a positive sign. But without understanding the sign, you cannot know what you are. And this creates all the social anxiety that people have, even to the underlying significance of what should I want? Am I beautiful or ugly? Am I gay or straight? Masculine or feminine? Am I whatever? The individual ego doesn't know because it depends on what the other wants from you that will determine what you are to them. And so there is a complete chaotic incoherence of reality. And so therefore, the only way to be liberated from this state, which is called being a sentient being, in other words, being vulnerable to the signs of the other, is to realize you do not exist objectively and therefore cannot be signified, cannot be named, cannot be categorized, and you are free of that system of enslavement to the hierarchy of values determined by an other's desire to use you as an object. So the next question is, yet it is recorded that whosoever possesses the 32 characteristic signs of a Buddha is able to deliver sentient beings. You know, the whole academic discipline of semiotics and linguistics developed at the late 19th century. They didn't have any understanding of that in the West. But here is a semiotician, Huang Po, who understands back in the 8th century that it was all about the signs of a Buddha, okay? And so he answers, anything possessing any signs is illusory. Okay, do you understand that? Anything that possesses any signs, if your mind is possessed by signs and believes that it is that which has a name and a form, then you have fallen into the clutches of illusion. So, it is by perceiving that all signs are no signs, in other words, they don't signify anything, that you perceive the Buddha. Because the Buddha is the freedom from signification that is the real. Buddha and sentient beings are both your own false conceptions. The signs lead to conceptions that are based in images, sensory images of a reality that is either positive or negative, yin or yang, good or bad, but it is always imaginary and based on projection. So it is because you do not know real mind that you delude yourselves with such objective concepts. If you will conceive of a Buddha, you will be obstructed by that Buddha. Okay? So whatever value you have projected out as the one who is your pope or the one who determines your reality, which is always your object of desire, because you want to be desired by that one whom you have projected has the power to see you as you really are. But then, what if what they see is not so good one day? You will be crushed if you have given your power over to any other. So, any Buddha that you create in your mind, you will be enslaved to. And it's this form of idol worship that is the worship of the I-doll, but the I-doll is controlled in the doll house of the other, and you don't want to belong to that other because that will obstruct your freedom to realize the self. So he says, when you conceive of sentient beings, you will be obstructed by those beings. All such dualistic concepts as ignorant or enlightened, pure and impure, they are all obstructions. It is because your minds are hindered by them that the wheel of the law must be turned, right? Why? Because the teachings must continue to be relevant to the type of signs that are the currency of a particular age or culture or subculture, or a vocabulary of values that will develop in different moments of history. And so the Buddhist teachings are a constant renewal of signs that are relevant to a particular period that will continue to maintain a structure of hierarchical relationships in which the Dalai Lama or whoever is the top dog Buddha incarnation or impersonation will then determine the whole hierarchy of that structure, or if it's the Pope or the Mullah or whoever, the Ayatollah. These kinds of structural signification systems that will determine social orders are always to capture the intentionality and the energies and basically the mind control capacity over a social order to keep it domesticated and tamed. So, just as apes spend their time throwing things away and picking them up again unceasingly, so it is with you and your learning. All you need is to give up your learning, your ignorant and your enlightened distinctions, right? Your attachment and activity. Such things are mere conveniences, mere ornaments within the one mind. I hear you have studied the sutras of the 12 divisions of the three vehicles. They are all mere empirical concepts. Really, you must give them up. Okay? If you want to be the Buddha, you must give up the sign of the Buddha and the desire to be signified as having the right to that sign. The real is impossible to be measured or even recognized by the other. So, he says, just discard all you have acquired as being no better than a bed that was spread for you when you were sick. All right? When you're sick and weak as a baby, you need the signs of love, the proof that you're loved. And so you then pander to get those signs. But once you're well, you don't want to be in that sick bed of dependence upon the strokes and the back scratching of the other to feel good about yourself. Only when you have abandoned all perceptions, there being nothing objective to perceive, only when phenomena obstruct you no longer, only when you have rid yourself of the whole gamut of dualistic concepts, of ignorant and enlightened, or any other categories, will you at last earn the title of transcendental Buddha. Meaning you will have transcended the imaginary and the symbolic planes in which your mind had been captured. Therefore, it is written, your prostrations are in vain. No matter how many times you bow down to your golden calf, you're going to get no milk. So put no faith in such ceremonies. Hide from such false beliefs. Since mind knows no divisions into separate entities, phenomena must be equally undifferentiated. Since mind is above all activity, so must it be with phenomena. Every phenomenon that exists is a creation of thought. Therefore, I need but empty my mind to discover that all of them are void. Okay, and it's that voidness, the voidness of the meaninglessness of meaning itself, that needs to be recognized. And one must no longer cling to that mental chatter that attempts to ground you in some signification that you're a good little girl or boy. Okay. It is the same with all sense objects. To whichever of the myriad of categories they belong, the entire void stretching out in all directions is one substance with mind. And since mind is fundamentally undifferentiated, so must it be with everything else. Different entities appear to you only because your perceptions differ, just as the colors of the precious delicacies eaten by the devas are said to differ in accordance with the individual merits of the devas eating them. You know, there's no such thing as color in the world. There's simply electromagnetic spectra and frequencies, but they are imaginarily interpreted as colors by the mind that wants to see a world that exists objectively and has either beauty or ugliness or symmetry or asymmetry or whatever else. But it is all a construction of the mind. There is no world at all outside of the mental constructs. So he summarizes, Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi, that means the perfect supreme enlightenment, is a name for the realization that the Buddhas of the whole universe do not, in fact, possess the smallest perceptible attribute. There exists just one mind. There is no multiplicity of forms, no celestial brilliance, and no glorious victory over samsara or submission to the victor, right, the Buddha. Since no glorious victory was ever won, there can be no such formal entity as a Buddha. And since no submission ever took place, there can be no such formal entities as sentient beings. In other words, you're not a fallen soul who has committed some original sin and therefore must suffer in the hell realm of Kali Yuga until you have purified your heart and freed yourself from all of your attachments to Maya, etc. No, there is no victory over Maya and there is no submission to Maya. There is only either the belief in signs in which you make your own mind your obstruction, or the freedom from those signs which open you to the infinite. And indeed there is celestial brilliance, but it emerges out of yourself. And that victory is eternal because you can be nothing else but the Buddha, since there is nothing else you could be. But to fall asleep into the belief that language contains any reality when it is a mere projection of a system of values that produce an illusory world in which you're either top dog or bottom dog or struggling to get somewhere but through the approval of the other who determines that, is going to keep you on that hamster wheel in which you never get off the wheel of the law to get beyond the sutras and to discover that void that can never be sutured by language, because it is always freedom itself. If you want freedom, be free from the thoughts of the ego, and then know the Buddha as the real, that you cannot be other than, simply by freeing yourself from the monkey mind of meaningless chatter. This is Sat Yoga. May you know the peace that comes from complete freedom from conceptualizing in the mind and differentiating with thought between positive and negative, good and bad, and all the other dualities that create incoherent fragmentation of consciousness. May you know the deeper peace that transcends the entire plane of representation and abides that in the real dimension that is unchanging, timeless, and that is filled with the luminous presence of the real self that is infinite, uncontainable, and indescribable in any language. And may you know the supreme peace of realizing you are that without a single thought whatsoever to disturb that peace evermore. May you abide as the silence of the Buddha. Namaste. Namaste.